This is Ashti Kankano of the Chagatai Mongols Guild and the Souls Alliance, welcoming you to another episode of Guildcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the 73rd episode of Guildcast for June 10th, 2007. I'm your host, Sean. In this episode, I'm going to stray a bit from all of the beginner's topics we've been stuck on for the last few shows, and I'm going to talk about the elite area known as the Domain of Anguish. In fact, I received a perfectly timed voicemail this week from a listener in Quebec.
Hi, Sean, Lady Sinéa. This is your friend, the Baron Ragnarok from Quebec. Auditeur préféré. I just tried the first step of Malik's the Unyielding with one of our guildies in Raman. We tried to go in with six heroes because I was short on time and no one else was readily available. We got, well, I won't describe it because it was like really ugly. Do you have any pointers for these kind of elite missions? I'm not going to try it again with heroes, that's for sure, although it's probably feasible. I would like it if you could start giving pointers, information, or anything you think would be useful about these kind of elite missions. How to properly do them, where to get them. I know there are a few of them, but I've finished all three chapters and I don't think I've found more than two of them. The only one I can think of right now is Malix himself. Anyways, keep up the great work and take care.
So there you have it. I hope I can answer some of your questions regarding that quest and more with this episode. Just take note, though, if you haven't finished Nightfall yet, you might not want to listen to this episode just yet, because there's a few minor storyline spoilers. Also, we have quite a collection of segments this time around. We have one from Goose, his Back to the Basics segment regarding party manners this time. Logan Star Logic is back with his LFG segment all about the Dragon's Lair in Prophecies. We have a new segment submission from Greg, where he tells us how he's learned to defeat the Gate of Madness with only Heroes and Henchies. And of course, we have Lady Sinéa's Word on the Street segment. Some players who asked to be mentioned this week include Valo Pureheart, You Know You Think I'm Hot, the Poisoned Archer, the Baron Ragnarok, whose voicemail we just heard a second ago, and Hunter of the Flame. There are also a few other people, as we mentioned, but Lady Sinéa actually mentions them in her segment. There really hasn't been much important news this last week or two, except for there's a pretty sweet video out there that was released last week, I think June 1st, and it has some Eye of the North footage in it. A little teaser trailer that ArenaNet cooked up. And it's in an article over at IGN.com, and of course I'll put a link to it in today's show notes, so go ahead and check that out. If you've listened to the last episode of Virgin Worlds, I believe it was 71, you've heard that Guildcast is joining up with the Virgin Worlds Podcast Collective, which is basically like the Podcast Mafia. No, it's actually something that I thought was a great idea by Brent over at Virgin Worlds, where he's offering MMO podcasts a means to get together in like a podcast community of sorts, or an MMO podcast community. I'll put a link to that in today's show notes also, with his explanation of this, because he says it a little bit better than I could. But I joined up as one of the more established podcasts of the group for a few reasons. Number one, to show my support for this great idea that Brent has for the future of MMO podcasts. And number two, to help relieve a little bit of the technical burden that I still struggle with a bit today. See, Brent is a pretty tech-savvy guy, and I'm not. So things like messing with the RSS feed and the actual updating of the shows and the feed itself, you know, and things like that will be handled by him now. And with this will come a few changes, mainly just to the website. Like, I'll be putting up my show notes on the Guildcast section of his website at virginworlds.com instead of at guildcast.com/show. But in its place on the main Guildcast webpage will be an explanation of what Guildcast is, what the Virgin Worlds Collective is, and where to find the show notes, the forums, the wiki, etc., things like that. There'll all be links to all that stuff still, and it'll still keep the same layout and everything, but I just won't put the show notes there anymore. They'll now be on Brent's page. And this is all still in the works, though. It's not up yet, so it won't happen completely still for a while. The Domain of Anguish is an elite region in the Nightfall campaign. The domain consists of one outpost, four explorable areas, and an elite mission. Well, technically the explorable areas are part of one big explorable area, known as the Gate of Anguish, but I'll talk a little bit more about that later. According to lore, the Domain of Anguish is the place within the Realm of Torment that the evil forces of Abaddon retreated to after the defeat of their Dark Lord. From this fallback position, they try to rebuild a bastion of power and to threaten the Goddess of Truth. Players may venture into the domain to stop the demons from succeeding. As reward for overcoming the dangers, the area offers some rare, perfect, or unique items known as Tormented Weapons and Stygian Weapons. They also offer new armor for heroes, and of course, you may unlock Raza the Ritualist hero. The Domain of Anguish was first introduced to us in the December 1st, 2006 update, and on that day we got a little description of the area from the official Guild Wars game update page, and it said, "Hail, almighty heroes! Your efforts on behalf of Alona and Living World have been praised in song and legend, and you have earned high praise amongst even the true gods themselves. However, let it be known that your task is not yet complete. The evil you fought still infuses the Realm of Torment with its malignant magic. Those who follow the Dark Lord thrive in hidden places where the light of truth does not shine. Chief among these followers is Malix the Unyielding, a great and terrible Morganite leader who's tamed hordes of demons in his Dark Lord's service. Malix has now fallen back to his ebony citadel within the Domain of Anguish, where he plots to usurp the powers of the gods and sit upon his Dark Master's throne. Malix has rallied the last remnants of the Morganite army, along with their greatest surviving leaders. In addition, vast hordes of demons, titans, and other vile creatures have all flocked to his unholy banner. Only the bravest of heroes may halt Malix's rebellion. If you are worthy, then scour the Domain of Anguish and cast down this would-be usurper. Meet me at the Gates of Anguish, and I shall tell you more of what lies ahead, and show you how the last shreds of the Dark Lord's power may yet be crushed. High Priest Zelix of the Forgotten." The Domain of Anguish is a sub-region of the Realm of Torment, but even though some of the other gates are visible at a distance, there is no direct connection within the realm itself. Only once unlocked, it appears on the Realm of Torment map at the bottom center, and players may travel to it using the map itself. The only way to get to the Domain of Anguish initially is via the Chantry of Secrets. In the Chantry, there is a restricted area behind a gate that's blocked by a Guardian of Whispers. Only people who have defeated Abaddon in the Abaddon's Gate mission, in other words, have beaten Nightfall, are granted access by the Guardian. Within the area, there is a statue of the Goddess of Truth. At this statue, players may summon the Seer of Truth, who teleports players to the Gate of Anguish. This can be done by typing /kneel in front of the statue. Some interesting tidbits to keep in mind for the Domain of Anguish are, most monsters carry the skill Enraged. This causes them to do more damage when they take damage, so using AoE damage against these mobs can be counterproductive. So contrary to PvE tactics in most areas, spike-oriented teams may be more effective. And like as we know, spike-oriented teams are more a PvP kind of a tactic. Also, instead of Enraged, Torment creatures carry Call to the Torment, which allows them to spawn a copy of themselves when below a certain amount of health. And there are no henchmen in the Domain of Anguish, although heroes are allowed. So let's go over the maps of the DOA. First we have the Gate of Anguish Outpost. This outpost is your initial entry point to the DOA, where you get two quests, Finding a Purpose from Chaplain Phyretis, I guess that's how it's pronounced, and the ever-popular Malix the Unyielding quest from High Priest Zelix. This last quest is where you basically finish all other quests in the area, so I would plan on spending more than just, you know, a few minutes on it. The other quest, Finding a Purpose, is actually the quest you need to complete to get the hero Raza, the Ritualist hero. This used to be a much more difficult process that involved getting gemstones and beating the Domain of Anguish itself and, you know, all that. But with the uproar of commenting on how hard it was, ArenaNet decided to make it a little bit easier. And then we have the explorable area known as Gate of Anguish, which consists of four separate explorable areas. First, there's City of Torquois. Now, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, or actually, in fact, a lot of these I don't know if I'm pronouncing right, but just bear with me. This area has the environmental effect called repressive energy that makes players lose 2 energy whenever they attack or use a skill. Basically, it's like the Ranger Spirit quicksand. Right by the entrance, you'll find an NPC named Captain Sularesh, who will give you the quest, The City of Torquois. The next explorable area we have is the Foundry of Failed Creations, which is a forge operated by the demons of the Realm of Torment to manufacture titans. The foundry also serves another purpose. It's a prison for souls stolen by the Marganites. They imprison souls in this place, and they subject them to great torment and suffering, and they somehow use their souls to create the titans. According to Oris Trevis, the foundry used to be a prison operated by the Forgotten to imprison troublesome Marganites and such menacing creatures as the Fury. However, as Abaddon's grasp on the Realm of Torment grew stronger, the Fury shattered his shackles, and the Marganites were able to wrestle it from the Forgotten and use it for their own purposes. The Fury is now in charge of the Foundry and has shaped it according to his twisted whims. You will find 2 quest givers in this area. There's Captain Jiraz, who gives the Foundry of Failed Creations quest, and Teclis, who gives the Foundry Breakout quest. Now, both the Foundry and the City of Torquois have Marganite enemies, and the names may be a little bit confusing for first-timers in their area. So let me just go over some of the classes of the different Marganites. We have the Marganite Anarvu, which is the warrior, the Anartuk, which is the ranger, the Anarchy is the monk, and I imagine there's a little play on words there, Anarchy. That's actually the important one you need to watch for, you know, the monk, especially if you're taking down the monks first, if that's your tactic. And then we have the Anar Dabi, which is the necromancer, the Anar Kaya is the mesmer, the Anar Su is the elementalist, and the Anar Rook is the dervish. And the last one is the Anar Rund, which is the paragon. I don't see any assassins in there. Weird. This area also consists of a bunch of different titans, but most notably is the level 29 boss known as the Fury, who drops an assortment of green ghostly staves. Next we have the Ravenheart Gloom, which is the region of darkness in the Domain of Anguish. The area itself is shrouded in a thick darkness that prevents players from seeing further than several feet ahead of themselves. At the entrance, there's a Shard of Brilliance to provide some light. The environmental effect of this area is Shroud of Darkness, which makes all attacks have a 50% chance to miss. Infesting this area are members of the Shadow Army and also Torment creatures. They're all level 28, but later on you'll come across 2 level 30 creatures who, they're not really bosses, but they do actually drop green items. They are the Darkness and the Greater Darkness. And finally, we have Stygian Vale, or Stygian Vale, however you want to pronounce it. The environmental effect here is Demonic Miasma, where every time you block or dodge an attack, you take 50 damage. This area is infested with members of the Shadow Army and Torment creatures, like in Ravenheart, but we also have the Stygians here. There is one quest giver here, the Adept of Whispers, and he actually gives 2 quests, Breaching the Stygian Vale and Brood Wars. During this quest, you'll find the Stygian Lords, who are the green droppers of the area. Now that we're a little more familiar with the areas of the Domain of Anguish, let's talk about some of the other features. I think most often, the main reason people come here is for the challenge of this elite area, right? The creatures are just impossibly hard, and then you combine that with those environmental effects, and it just makes for situations where you can't just walk in with your normal everyday PvE build and expect to really last more than 3 seconds. Also, we have the green drops. That's another reason people come down there. These areas of the Domain of Anguish have some of the best unique items in the game, so far, I guess. Another reason people come down here is the gemstone drops. So let's talk a little bit more about these since they're new to the game with the introduction of this area. The Anguish gemstones consist of 4 different types. There's the Margonite gemstone, the Stygian gemstone, the Titan gemstone, and the Torment gemstone. One of each of these can be traded to the Keeper of Secrets in the Gate of Anguish outpost for a Coffer of Whispers. 60 Anguish gemstones, which would be 15 of each type, can be traded to any Spirit of Truth for an Arm Brace of Truth, which can be traded to the Deacon of Whispers for gold tormented items. Whoa, wait. Back up there a minute, Sean. A what and a who? Okay, well, let's start out with the Coffer of Whispers. Upon activation, the coffer turns into a random item that may be one of the following. Either a 5 Anguish gemstones of the same type, which kind of sucks, 1 Arm Brace of Truth, which I'll explain in a minute, 5 Demonic Keys for opening demonic chests in the DOA, 5 Diamonds, which is a rare crafting material that really doesn't have a use yet, but they do sell for quite a bit, 5 Elixirs of Valor, which gives you a 10% morale boost, kind of like a candy cane, 1 Miniature Malix, a much sought after mini pet, 5 rubies, or 5 sapphires, which are both rare crafting materials used to craft Vabian armor. They also sell for quite a few K each. 5 scrolls of the Lightbringer, which gives you triple XP in combat for 10 minutes. And finally, the last possible thing you can get from a Coffer of Whispers is 1 Primeval Armor Remnant. Now these are like the other armor remnants that you can use to upgrade the look of your hero's armor. You take this to the Armor Smith of Whispers in the Gate of Anguish, and he'll craft some primeval armor for your heroes. Okay, so that was the Coffer of Whispers from 1 of each gemstone, and then there's the Arm Brace of Truth that you can trade for a gold tormented item. These tormented items are basically like the stuff you get at the end of Factions or Nightfall, where there's 1 for each attribute, or almost each attribute. And if you get a chance, go check out the rare skins on these tormented items on GuildWiki, because they're just, I mean, they're crazy looking. My favorite is probably the tormented shield, but the tormented sword and axe are just really wild. You have to go check them out. I should probably put a link to that in today's show notes, too. So, there you have it. That's all I know about the Domain of Anguish, straight from guildwiki.org. I know it's a lot of information, especially if you've never been there before, but I'm hoping that this episode may reveal things to the experienced players that maybe they've missed out on while they're doing the Domain of Anguish.
Big Daddy Goose.
Greetings, Extended Guildies. Goose here again. I want to share a story with you that happened to me a few weeks ago. I was trying to beat prophecies. Yes, yes. Go ahead, snicker. Did I mention that I'm not a good player? I know my face looks kind of dark. That's actually dirt. Anyway, I've been having trouble beating the last 3 missions on prophecies. And so, finally, late one night, I got on, and I got into a pug. That's PUG, stands for Pickup Group, for the 2 of you out there that did not know that. Well, normally when I get into pugs, I don't have positive outcomes. I think there's a number of you that could probably relate. This one, however, did extremely well. We had my warrior monk, we had 2 Ellies, we had a ranger, a mesmer, a healer, and a healer henchman. We did extremely well. This one pickup group lasted me through the last 3 missions on prophecies and helped me win the game. we did so well that we didn't even want to part company. A few of us actually, you know, swapped in-game names and put each other on buddy lists, and we all agreed that we'd stay in touch. And even today, I still have a few of them that see me in-game and say hi, and I say hi to them. But this got me thinking, how come this one pickup group did so well for me when there are so many others that did not do well? And I started thinking about it. This pickup group did well, I believe, because we had a great team dynamic. We all respected each other. And while this may not seem like a game-winning scenario, it goes a long way with your party. Let me explain. If you have a team that's respectful of each other, you're going to produce the best players. You're going to bring out the best performance when you have them encouraged and excited to play for you or to play with you. So I thought this time I'd go back to basics regarding party manners. Now, whenever you form a party or join a party, you must remember that you're always playing with people in the world. You're playing with real people. Now, this may sound like a duh, but actually, most people forget that the people you're playing with have real lives. They have parents. They have brothers and sisters. They have children. They have wives. They have husbands. They have boyfriends, girlfriends. They have school. They have jobs. They have sicknesses. They have illnesses. They have medical conditions. They have internet connections that are not as good as you or me. In short, they have a number of things that contribute to their gameplay online, and these should not be held against them. Some of them might just be jerks, so, you know, just ignore those. Anyway, let's break this down into a couple lists of do's and don'ts, just to give us some practicals of how to interact with others when we're playing the game. This might help you form better parties and will help you get the best performance out of your party members. First, let's go over the do not list. Number one, do not go clickfest on the minimap. This is extremely irritating and annoying. And while you may think you know where to go and you may think you're trying to do something cool and impressive, it's really just annoying everyone else in the group. Number two, do not try to go solo and show off your mad skills. This is not going to impress anyone. It will get you killed, and it will probably get everyone else killed. Number three, do not spend time trying to explain why someone is wrong or what they should be doing. You're trying to fight a battle here, not type an essay. So don't spend time explaining things. If they're not doing it right, just go with flow. And then when you get back into the outpost, you can explain in time what you're supposed to do. Number four, do not assume that your way is always the best way. True, you may have done this mission a billion times. You may have researched it on the internet a billion times. You may know everything there is to know about this mission. The fact remains, people have different styles. There's always new things that pop up. There's always differences. There's always something that's going to make this one time unique from every other time you've played. So keep in mind that just because you've done it a million times one way does not necessarily mean that that is the best way to do it this time. So just keep an open mind. And finally, number five on the do not list, do not hold others' mistakes against them. This is the quickest way to start up a flame war. When someone does something wrong, or they make a mistake, or even if they didn't know they were doing it, don't hold it against them. I can speak by personal experience that there's a number of times I've made dozens of mistakes. But that's the only way I learn. If I go into a mission with the wrong skill, or I forget to take a res, or something stupid, well, I'm going to learn from that. But if the entire team spends their time putting me down for that, I'm not going to want to play anymore. And I'm certainly not going to want to play with them. And I'm certainly not going to want to give them my best experience. So don't hold others' mistakes against them. Just remember that you've made mistakes before too. So try to be forgiving. Let's go over the do list. Number one, do pay attention to the minimap. I know things kind of get hectic in missions and quests, but if you completely ignore the mini-map, you might be missing out on something that your leader is desperately trying to show you, or something that someone's trying to bring to your attention. Please pay attention to the mini-map whenever you can. Number 2. Follow the leader. Even if you would do it differently, it doesn't matter. The leader is your appointed leader. He might be doing it wrong. He might be doing it a different way than you'd be doing it. But it's your duty to follow your leader. If your leader makes a mistake and leads everyone down the path of destruction and everyone dies, your leader will learn from that and he'll know what to do next time. So please, follow your leader and have respect for him. Number 3. Discuss your strategy and playing style before battle. Now this is incredibly important. When we did the Ring of Fire missions with this pickup group that I was with a couple weeks ago, one of the things that we did was before we went into battle, and this is something that everyone should be doing, we discussed before the battle what to expect and what we're going to be doing. For example, we had one ranger in our group, and everyone knew the ranger needed to bring winter. That ranger did not know to bring winter. And so we had to explain why that ranger needed to bring winter, and through the whole mission, he kept winter up as often as possible. And that's one of the things that helped us. Well, if we hadn't discussed that beforehand, the ranger would have brought something else. The ranger probably would have tried a fire barrage build, who knows? And we would have gotten blasted to Kingdom Come. None of us would have beat the mission. We probably would have split the group up, and we wouldn't have won as easily. So, please discuss your strategy and your playstyle before you go into battle so that everyone knows what everyone's doing. Also, monks, this is the best time to explain to everyone what kind of monk you are. If you're one of the rare, smiting-only monks, you need to explain this ahead of time so that everyone doesn't think you're going to be healing them individually. Number 4. If you are the leader of a group, please be willing to accept direction from others. There are many players out there that have probably done this mission 101 ways better than you have. You don't know that. You don't know if someone has new information that just came out in an update. You don't know that. So if someone's offering a suggestion, as a leader, be willing to entertain that idea. I'm not saying you have to do everything the group tells you to, but I am saying to keep an open mind. As a leader, you need to be willing to listen to your party members, to listen to your group, just to understand what they're talking about. They might have information you don't. So please just be willing to listen to your group and be willing to take advice from them. Number 5, be forgiving of mistakes. This goes back to the do not, number 5, of do not hold others' mistakes against them. This is critical to forming a great party and keeping the party members encouraged and eager to do their best. If you're encouraging each other in the party, if you're forgiving them of their mistakes and helping them to learn how they can do things better, they're going to want to give their best when they're playing with you. It's the same thing in sports. A good coach needs to keep his team encouraged. If he keeps getting down on his team and telling them that they're doing horrible and they don't know what they're doing, they're not going to want to play. So if you want to get the best out of your team members, if you want to get the best out of your fellow players, be encouraging to them, be forgiving, help them instead of hurting them. Now these practicals can be useful with any pickup group, in any mission, in any campaign. The most important thing to remember when you're dealing with live players is to remember these are real people. Just try to imagine them sitting across from you. Try to imagine them as your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your best friend or your brother. They're real people, so you need to treat them as real people and not computer components. Until next time, this has been
Big Daddy Goose.
Hey Sean and all you GoCast listeners out there, this is Greg from Shiro's Secret Agents, and I'm here to talk to you guys today about the Gate of Madness mission. I thought I'd give you guys a bit of a verbal walkthrough as to how to complete this mission solo so that if you're having some problems with it, this might give you some ideas of different things to try with your guildies or to just do it on your own. I'm the type of person who I like playing with other people and I like with pickup groups, but every now and then I like to just do things on my own and kind of get it through. So I've done this mission quite a few times to eventually get the masters on solo. Well, let's talk about Gate of Madness. This is the second to last mission before the end of Nightfall. The mission involves kind of walking through the Netherlands and eventually meeting up with the Undead Lich and Shiro at the end as your bosses. The master's objective here is there are five shrines at the very end of the map. And if you capture all five shrines before defeating Shiro and the Lich, then you will get masters, which seems like a pretty easy masters, but to get there is somewhat difficult. If you're going to do this solo, then you definitely are going to take a full complement of heroes and henchmen with you. The heroes I would recommend is, I would take Zed with you as an Earth Magic AoE Elementalist, and I would strongly suggest on making sure you have Ward Against Elements, Ward Against Foes, and Ward Against Melee in his skill set. For a healer, I would bring Dunkoro with you and make sure that he has Light of Deliverance with him. Aegeus is also very helpful here. And I would also bring one of the Necromancers. I personally prefer Master of Whispers. And I'd either set him up as an SV or an SS Necro. I preferred to use him as an SV Necro after much trial. There were some suggestions in the guild wiki that a Minion Master Necro would work, and I can tell you that a Minion Master Necro definitely will not work. If Necromancer is not the way you want to roll, I would highly recommend then bringing Koss and make sure that Koss has Wild Blow attached to them. I generally play a Dervish going through Nightfall, so I also have the Dervish loaded up with Wild Blow. This is mostly to interrupt Shiro's buildup of attack later on in the mission. As for your henchmen, I would take on two more healers with you, the Dervish, and something that counters what you are playing. So, for example, I play a Dervish normally, so I would actually bring in a Paragon or a Ranger into this mission in order to have another long-range attacker. If you are playing a Ranger or you're playing a long-range attacker, I'd bring in either another mid-range attacker, someone like an Illusionist, or a short-range attacker like the Warrior. But basically, something to counter your skills from a distance standpoint. One thing to make sure of is that when you're setting up your own character, make sure you bring Lightbringer's Gaze with you. It's not going to help you against Shiro, but it is going to help you against almost every other monster on the map. And it's actually very good to have to just give a lot of characters a lot of damage very quickly. The monsters on this mission are not overtly difficult, but taking them in the right sequence is very important. The only one that's really nasty is Shiro at the very end, and that's why you kind of need a lot of planning and the right character combination. Okay, enough with me talking. Let's get into the mission now of how we're really going to run this thing. When you come in, you're going to see Carmier at the very beginning, who has some initial text, and then you're going to bear off to the right, and you're going to hit your first group of Marganites. This is where Lightbringer's Gaze becomes important, because basically the first thing you can do is cast it and hit all of the five creatures there for anywhere from 55 to 100 right off the bat. Take out this first group of Marganites, and then wait a little bit. You're going to see another group of Marganites coming towards you. Do not engage them. They will actually come towards you and then leave, so that you can stay to the left-hand side of the trail and basically not have to engage them. As you're coming around the left-hand corner, just before you get on the bridge, you're going to get hit with three more monsters. They're going to jump up from the side, so just be ready for them, and then just take them out really quick. Now, right on the bridge, you're going to see two Titan Abominations. Move forward a little bit, and then hit both Titan Abominations with Lightbringer's Gaze. At this point, choose one and hit it. When that one goes down, wait a second, let it turn into a Pan Titan, and then kill it. Leave the other Titan Abomination alone and focus on the Pan Titan. When that Pan Titan dies, it's going to make two Madness Titans. Take down the two Madness Titans and then go back and hit the other Titan Abomination. What this is going to do is basically prevent you from being, if you go back and forth between the two Titan Abominations and make them into Pan Titans and then make them both into Madness Titans, you're going to be stuck fighting four Titans at once, where you can take them one by one and keep using Lightbringer's Gaze to bring them down. So now that you've killed this first group of Pan Titans, you could either go straight or go to the right. And it's a little hard to see the path to the right, but there's a white stone that sticks up on the right-hand side. You basically go around that stone, and if you're looking to the right, you're going to see two more Titan Abominations. So you're going to go right and hit those two Titan Abominations, again, using the same process and pattern that I just described. To your left from the Titan Abominations, once they are gone, you're going to see a Torment Claw. Head towards the Torment Claw, hit it with Lightbringer's Gaze, and don't attack it. Let your henchmen go out and kill that Torment Claw for you. This way, if it comes slamming down and it takes out your dervish, it doesn't hit you, and you don't get the death penalty against it. So let your henchies take it out. It's okay. If you look a little further after you've finished with the Torment Claw, you're going to see another group of Marganites out there. Again, do not engage this group of Marganites. They're going to walk left, stop, and then go right, so you can avoid having to take this group out altogether again. And like before, stay to the left of the trail, keep going down, and you're going to have three more monsters pop up at you off the side of the map. Take them out, and then just wait there. What's going to happen is, in front of you, you're going to see another group of Marganites come towards you and go back. Mark how forward they came forward, and then go to that spot and wait for that group to walk away and come back. In fact, it's pretty good to flag your group there as well, too, because a small group of monsters is going to come down the hill, which has a Word of Madness with it. And they can be pretty nasty if they're engaged with the Marganites. So flag your group below the bottom of there. Wait for that group of Marganites to come back and only engage the group of Marganites. I think there's about five of them there, and there's a cleric in that group, so hit the cleric first. Once that group of Marganites is done, move a little bit up the hill to your right and engage that other group of monsters. I think there's four in there with one Word of Madness. So, of course, hit the Word of Madness first, and then engage the rest of the items. The trail now splits, so part of it goes up the hill and part of it goes to the left, and there's another group of monsters that are going to be down to the left. This is important in a little bit. Go up the hill trail, and you're going to see two Torment Claws continuing up the hill to your left. Flag your group to the right of the hill with the Torment Claws, and then attack the two Torment Claws. Now, the reason you want to flag your group to the right is because if you let them go willy-nilly around the Torment Claws, there's a chance that they may aggro the lower monster group on the trail, and bringing them up can be a real pain in the butt. So if you flag them to the right, they won't aggro that group, and as long as you don't aggro them, it's, again, one less group you have to deal with. After you've killed those two Torment Claws on the hill, go up a little ways up the hill, and you're going to be hit by some Shadow Wraiths. Kill the Wraiths, and then stop there and wait. At this point, you're about halfway up the second half of the hill. Flag your group of henchmen back to the bottom of the hill where you originally hit the Marganites and that small group of monsters. This is going to become evident in a moment. Once they are flagged to the bottom of the hill, you should walk up to the top of the hill, which is going to start the process of Shiro and Lich talking about, oh, I can't believe they've gotten this far. It's no matter. The minute that discussion starts, turn around and run back to the bottom of the hill. What will happen is, at the very, very top of that hill, there are going to spawn a lot of monsters. In the middle section landing, a gate is going to open up, and a bunch of monsters are going to spawn out of there and head up the hill again. As this happens, you and your whole group will be at the bottom of the hill. You will not aggro these monsters. They will all collect at the top of the hill. Then you can unflag your party, go up to the middle landing, and scoot in behind them. So you don't have to face this large group of about 15 monsters and two bosses. You're going to sneak in behind them. And you're going to know you're going to be going the right way because usually they leave behind a spirit of pain. So if you just target the spirit of pain and send everybody to attack that, that's fine. This is going to bring you into the first of two main round battle areas that you're going to have to deal with. As you walk in a little bit beyond the spirit of pain, wait there, and Shiro and the Lich are going to have another conversation about the portals being opened and that this is going to be the end of your time, yada, 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 yada. You get the idea. At this point, a bunch of monsters are going to spawn in this area, and you should wait at the top. Let all of these monsters spawn in front of all the portals and start to get into their walking pattern. Don't engage them early on, because what you want to do is you want to pull these a little bit at a time and handle the portals one by one. From a first-person perspective, what you're going to do is you're going to start going to the right and go around the area. If you're looking at it from the map top-down, you're going to be going anti-clockwise around the room. To your right, you're going to see the first portal, and there is a couple of portal wraiths there. Usually there's 2 to 3 portal wraiths in front of each portal. What you're going to do is just go to the right and slowly take the portal wraiths out, and then it's also going to have a couple of Heralds of Nightmares, a Shadow of Fear, and I believe there's also a Blade of Corruption on that first one. And take that small group out. Just very slowly, very methodically, move your way around the room to get this done. What I would suggest is after the second portal, which has a large group of Marganites, to wait there. And you're going to be forced with another Titan. Pull the Titan on its own towards you, because it's going to actually spawn 4 different things after you kill it. So that Titan is probably the most important item in this room that you want to take on its own. The rest of the groups, take them as you normally do. Pull one or two, take the one or two down, move a little further, pull one or two, and just, again, slowly work around the room, killing everything in the room. Which, as you kill everything in the room, it's going to open up all the portals, which is the goal of this room. Once that is set, you're going to have a completely open, empty space, and a door will open in the far portion of the room. This door leads to our final two bosses, Shiro Takashi and the Lich. Going into this, make sure that you take a little time and that everybody's healed properly and everybody has their energy set up and they're all ready for this kind of last battle. And as you've noticed, we haven't done anything yet for the Masters. That's going to happen in this room. When you walk towards the door, you should be able to see Shiro and the Lich without actually aggroing them. Do this and target the Lich. We are going to ignore Shiro completely. That is key here. You don't want to take them at the same time. Focus on the Lich first. Run into the room, attack the Lich, and take him down. Shiro will hit other people in your party, but basically, he isn't going to take him down. So don't worry about it. Hit the Lich and take the Lich out. The minute he is out, turn off to the right and head up and hit the first shrine. Each shrine is guarded by Marganites, but the Marganites are all of the same type. So one of them is all clerics, one of them is all bowmen, one of them is all executioners, and so on. And there's no more than 4 at any of them. Go to the first one to the right, target the Marganites, take them down, wait at the shrine until the shrine is captured, and then you will receive 3 or 4 blessings off the shrine. Shiro probably will come up then and hit your people, but again, he won't hit them enough times to actually bring them down. Ignore him for this entire time. Ignore Shiro. Leave the first temple, go to the right, hit the next temple, do the exact same thing. And basically, you're going to go around the room, hitting each of the Marganites, and taking each of the temples and getting your blessings from them. Now, this is why having the wards are important, because the blessings basically make the wards stronger. So you want to make sure you get all the blessings, and you want to make sure you hit all 5 shrines, and you ignore Shiro completely. If you run into a problem where people get killed or you lose a majority of your group, which should not happen, there are two things you can do. The first, which is probably the easiest, is if you go into the very back right-hand corner or left-hand corner of any of the shrines, Shiro will disengage from you and go back to the center of the map. It's a null hiding point that is a bug in the system, and it actually can work to your advantage if you have to res somebody who's died in a shrine. The other option is that you can head out through the door, but we're going to talk about the door right now. After you've defeated the last shrine and you've gotten the last set of blessings, so you should have about 12 to 15 blessings on you, run back to the center and out the door that you came in. Shiro will pretty much come up to the doorway, stop, turn around, and head back. You're going to hit Shiro at this doorway because it's basically going to jam him into a space where you can hit him from multiple sides. He's going to want to focus on one or two groups, and if you spread your group out, you're going to basically be able to take him down in a very effective way. So, you've now run back out of where Shiro and the Lich was, into the main area where you've closed all the portals, and Shiro has gone back to the center of his group, of his area. At the doorwell, put Dunkoro on one side, Zed on the other, and whatever your either Master of Whispers or Koss at the top of the triangle. Position your other mini group of people just beyond the side, so two of your healers will be just beyond your heroes. Then go in and aggro Shiro and pull him to the door. Once he reaches the door, the rest of your group should start engaging and attacking him. Oftentimes, Zed will kick off Ward Against Elements and Ward Against Melee right there, which should reduce him. If you have yourself with Wild Blow and Koss with Wild Blow, or one of your other players with Wild Blow, you should stop him from basically doing his battle scars and his impossible odds. As he gets lower and lower, he's going to keep trying to do impossible odds. So the second that Wild Blow becomes available, hit Wild Blow to stop him from doing that. Oftentimes, the rest of his attacks will be nullified by the wards, and you can take him down relatively succinctly. It might take two or three tries to balance out the skill sets and to balance out the people to make it happen. But if you do it effectively, you should be able to take Shiro down relatively quickly. If you run into a problem and people start dying, just pull the whole group back into the center of the portal and set up to do it again. Shiro will back off into his area, reset, and it'll be as if you had just gotten there. Once that's set, you'll take Shiro down, and then you'll get your lovely splits, your lovely cutscene, and your master's reward, which you so surely deserve. Well, that should just about do it for the Gate of Madness mission. If you have any suggestions or some questions, we'll post them all on over into the Guildcast forums, and I will try to answer any questions anyone should have. Hopefully this helps, and good luck and good gaming. Solitude will take you
everywhere. Hi, I'm Logan Starlogic, and welcome to another edition of LFG Mission and Bonus. Did you like the little sound thingy I did there? Yeah, I thought that was pretty clever. Before I get started, I'd like to give out a little shout-out to everyone who's congratulated me on my last segment, my first segment, both in-game and on the forums, and on TeamSpeak. Some people said that it was a good segment and they liked it, but it was had a bit too much useless information, and that they would like to hear another episode, but, you know, maybe with a bit more useful information. So I've tweaked the segment a bit. It's still going to be not a walkthrough, mainly an assistance, though. And I'm not going to spoil any of the storyline or any major storyline spoilers. Like, I'm not going to say anything about the Ring of Fire missions or, yeah, I'm not going to say anything about that. For those of you just tuning in and hadn't listened to the episode before this, I pick a mission, then go through it multiple times, each time doing it with a different type of group. Say, one's with pugs, another with friends or alliance mates. And then another time maybe soloing the mission or doing it with henchies. Thus showing you the easiest, fastest, and possibly the most fun way to complete the mission. After your doppelganger battle in Augury Rock, you travel through a portal to the cave lair of the dragon Glint, who apparently knows how to defeat the Mersat and save your Shining Blade allies. On the map, there is no way to get to the dragon's lair without completing the doppelganger battle in Augury Rock. The reason for this is simple. Using Glint's magical powers, Glint hid her lair from the rest of the world by hiding it within a single grain of sand, hidden somewhere in the Crystal Desert. No one's quite sure where this grain of sand is, and people could be searching for years and still never find it. The other reason that you would want to complete this mission is that after you beat the mission, you have access to the Tomb of Primeval Kings, which is similar to the Underworld, except that it doesn't cost any money and it's really hard. But we're not talking about tombs, so let's get on with the mission. The mission has 7 chambers. 6 of these chambers relates to one of the 6 core professions. If a chamber is based on the monk, it will have primarily monks and warriors, because, you know, monks alone aren't gonna kill you. If it's a ranger area, it will have a whole lot more rangers. Same with elementalist and necromancer and mesmer, etc., etc. Each chamber has a particular condition. The first chamber has a health degen. The second chamber slows your character down. The third chamber does not have a condition, but it does have many mobs of mesmer spiders who are crystal, so they can't bleed. But they also have shatter enchantment and shatter hex, which lots of you who have fought mesmers or people who have played mesmers already know that that is a very annoying thing. The fourth chamber has energy draining, and the fifth chamber, even though it does not have a condition, it has these circles, if you will, that have constant AoE damage going in them. So if you step inside one, you'll start taking damage. In the sixth chamber has one of the most annoying, not quite conditions. Every 20 seconds, you will be knocked down for 5 seconds. This is pretty annoying, especially for casters, primarily like the ritualist or rangers who are interrupters or mesmers who are interrupters, and not to mention slow casting elementalists. But the main thing is that at the end of each chamber, there is a boss who is a smaller, ghost-like version of Glint. The profession is determined by which chamber it is. Say, in the first chamber, the boss is a monk, because the first chamber is the monk chamber. This is nice, because then you will have at least one elite skill capture for each profession that goes there. That's right, every boss, with the exception of Glint, has a elite skill. The 7th and final chamber is the Chamber of Glint. There's no enemies in this chamber, or so you think. From here, Glint tells you to go to Drachner's Forge, which suddenly a portal appears, and you get the little shield appears, and the sword goes through it and says, "Mission complete!" And you go through the portal, mission over. Or is it? If you travel to one of the far sides of the wall, you can find Glint's egg hatchlings. If you pick up one of the eggs, Glint will get very mad. That is when you discover the bonus. The bonus is to kill Glint, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense in the storyline. In fact, it doesn't make any at all. But you must destroy Glint. This is pretty easily accomplished with a full group of people, preferably on TeamSpeak, and a good set of interrupters, be they rangers or mesmers. Glint will have skills, most of them are attacking. Also, Glint has a couple of healing or protection skills. The only problem is that really only 2 skills are very dangerous. One is Crystal Hibernation, which allows Glint to regenerate, which is one of the things you really want to interrupt. And the other is Crystal Haze. Crystal Haze, if you have this on you, whenever you use up part of your energy, you get exhaustion for that amount of energy lost. Also, you have an energy degen. This is basically training for, the Ring of Fire and the energy degen devices that I forgot the name of. The build I ran during this mission is as follows. Empathy, Backfire, Shatter Enchantment, Chaos Storm, Arcane Thievery, Arcane Echo, Mark of Protection, which is an elite skill, and Rebirth. If you don't know what these skills are, ask me for a direct transcript if you can't understand what I said, and I'll make it up right there on the spot, or tell you the names so you can look them up on Guild Wiki. The first time I went through, I decided to take some friends from the forums. The people who went with me were myself, Ashura Maza, who you might also known as Pokey on the forums, Agenis Skye, Mundungus Belch, also known as Mushy P, is on the forum. Aeonia Ravenclaw, Knight of Aphrodite, also Chio, and Lysander Goodfellow, or Lysander on the forums, and Dunkoro, which really isn't my friend at all. The mission went fairly well. We got it done in about 44 minutes, give or take, with only a couple of stops for, you know, people having to go AFK for a couple of minutes for one thing or another, including myself. Glint was actually fairly easy, with a good set of interrupters to interrupt Glint's healing skills. Glint was fairly easy, just some degen and other things, and Glint was not hard at all. Something you might notice is that we did not have a tank. The closest thing to a tank we had was Pokey, who was a assassin, or myself, who acted like a tank, simply because I had Mark of Protection. Suggested by them, I interviewed Pokey, Lysander, and Chio, and asked them why they liked or disliked the mission in particular. And here's what they said, starting with Pokey.
Well, I don't really like this mission because it's long and it's... Well, the bonus is hard. I think it's the hardest bonus in all of Tyria, actually. You have to do the whole mission to get the bonus, which is different than all the other Tyrian missions.
I don't have any opinion, really. But if you want me... If you say one side, I like this mission. Because this is quite challenging for some new players and have all the skills for a core profession and they're all good. So, yeah, I like it.
I like this mission. They try to make it interesting by having several different, I guess, levels to it, each corresponding to the core professions. There's more variety and interest, especially with the atmospheric effects or environmental effects that make it better than the standard hack and slash, you know, hop in and kill everything the same way you did the last time around type. I mean, like Hell's Precipice, you go in there and it's, you know, the same surroundings, the same fire and brimstone throughout the whole darn mission. And here, you have different color hues. In every level, make it visually interesting. Different environmental effects. I think the first one and the last one, the warrior, are the best environmental effect. That -3 health degen is a really neat effect, and the knockdown really plays with their casters.
It's annoying.
Oh, well, I mean, if everything was perfectly easy, then you know why play the game? Yeah, it gives you a challenge. No, something out of the ordinary.
On that note, I have just realized that I am out of time for my segment this time. I know I only went through the mission once, but hopefully, this will be of some use to you. And for probably more information, go to guildwiki.com and search for Dragon's Lair. I think that's all for this episode, and... You'll probably hear from me again sometime if I'm not run out of the country and my account is banned from Guild Wars and something like that, all because nobody liked the episode. But if you do, it'll probably be a while because this was a very difficult episode to not only find the time to do, but also to edit. I tend to add... I know it's kind of hard to tell, but I add a lot of pauses and I say, a lot. So, as always, play well. And now play the obligatory bloopers. I am going to keep my idea of doing it with different groups, but still using the same build, and I haven't really explained what I'm doing. I don't have heroes because I don't have Nightfall. That was completely worthless. What am I doing? Shortly after the doppelganger battle in Agri Rock, you set off something... I don't know. Man, I'm good at this. I don't think there's any other history to this. I'll look it up on Wiki.
Victory's mine.
Yeah, what can you do?
And Glint is fat, so we can eat her meat. I hate you, Logan. I'm not gonna be part of this segment ever again.
I love you too, Chio. Screw this, I'm playing Guild Wars. Solitude will take you everywhere. Every damn
Hey all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street. First, some shoutouts. These are people who asked to be mentioned, people who gave me sugar items, or people that I just felt like naming just because, well, I can. And they are Kala Pace, Monkey in My Tank, Fameless Heartbreak, Chipmunk Kitty, Legolas Strife, Cracker Man, Quertiu Moonchild, Jinzo the Great, and Arbiter of Peril. My guildies Prime Assassin and MM's Light Scythe also helped me get Raza recently, and man, they just burned through that quest like it was nothing, so I wanted to thank them for helping me out there. There was also a person named Soul's Eye of the guild Leather Rebels, and I wasn't going to mention him because he sent me this really questionable email about how we should bring Loudon back on the show, so you know, that made me kind of a little bit wary of his judgment. But seriously, he sent me this very kind email about how he's enjoyed my recent couple of segments, and I thank him and everyone else who has commented on those to me. And yes, I agree that it's very nice to know that we're not the only ones who feel the same about the game or about guilds or about the people that we've come to know and love in this game. Speaking of which, I also got an email from Tom who shared with me the story about how he met his girlfriend Cassie on Guild Wars and how they've been together now for the better part of a year. So cheers! He feared that his story might sound somewhat geeky, but I didn't think it was at all. I view the internet as just another medium to communicate, and that Tom and Cassie's story is really becoming less and less uncommon all the time. But anyway, yeah, either it's not geeky at all, or I'm just too geeky now to recognize it as such anymore. So, good luck you two. Now on to our main topic. The Domain of Anguish is really quite interesting because if you've ever ventured in there without knowing what to expect, you surely know how quickly your entire group can be wiped out. By now, though, of course, some nice party builds have been worked out that make DOA much less painful than your first trip there probably was. Even with what you might call somewhat cookie-cutter builds, it doesn't mean that these builds suddenly make the whole area easy. It's not just about the builds, but also the pulls, the way in which the nuking is done, which groups you take out first, etc. So, confused yet? Yeah, I was too. I was trying to get it explained to me, and I just didn't understand what they were talking about without seeing it. Fortunately, I have a guildie who took me under his wing, and he has been showing me each of the areas one at a time. I started out with bonding, and even being the bonder, though, it's no relaxed walk-in-the-park job. You still have to be alert not only to whether the tank gets stripped, but things like maybe a couple of monsters break aggro and come after your casters. I would have to quickly see to it that our secondary tank got bonded and prodded up quickly so that the rest of us wouldn't be wiped out. So a lot of it is staying alert as to what's going on and listening to the instructions that are being given. A lot of these guys in DOA are very hard on new people. They want everything to be done just right, because, quite frankly, one wrong move can ruin an entire run, and that's no fun if you've been in there for 2.5 hours and then something stupid goes wrong. So, I recommend that you find out what the builds are for your class before you go in. Like, if you're gonna go bond, at least be familiar with bonding, so that you're not fumbling with your skills and trying to maintain enchantments when things get hairy. I had never used Healer's Boon before, and was asked to play the HB Monk. And sure, I had the skills, and it wasn't really that much trouble doing it, but I kept forgetting that HB wasn't a normal maintained enchantment, and someone in our party had to... She kept quite irritatedly reminding me to recast HB on myself. So, yeah, try to get familiar with your build before you go in. That way, when you're in there, you're not messing around with your skills when you should be learning the lay of the land. Also, listen to the instructions that are being given. Usually one or two people will be leading the group and directing people on where to go. Even in the same area, different people and different groups may handle it differently. Like, one tank might pull to a certain point that's different than what you're used to, or one group might want certain people standing together, or they want people standing in a line over here. It all depends on what that group is going to do. As long as everyone's on the same page, though, you should be okay. If you get instructions that you don't understand, ask. Or if you don't ask, just follow it. There's a reason for the things that they're telling you to do. If you're told to stop using fire attunement and blindly ignore that just because you don't understand why, you might charge in with Bip on you and be in range of some nice mesmer driders who will happily shatter your enchantments and leave you dead before you can blink. If you're told to stand against the wall or in a certain line and don't know why and you just go wherever you feel like it, you will likely incur the wrath of some beasts who think that your nice soft skin is much more tasty than the tank's. If you're told to stop using symbiosis and don't know why, your team will be quite unhappy when the dervish enemies are dang near impossible to kill just because of your spirit. Now, another thing to be aware of is whether you're in normal mode or hard mode. This will affect how the AI reacts to some of your actions, such as meteor shower. It's kind of like how doing smite runs in normal now in UW is so worth it again, just because of how the AI behaves. Now, I don't know enough about each area to go through them one by one with instructions, but I hope these few tips will give you an idea of what you're up against. It really is good to just ease into it and learn how the quests are usually completed. When I was healing in one run, I was asked to bring Necrotic Traversal, but I told my group that I hadn't ever done it before, so what they did was they had the Prop Monk bring it instead, because he was familiar with where they were supposed to stand and such. After watching how it was done a couple of times, I was able to bring NT myself, and had a pretty good idea of where I was supposed to go. A lot of it is just getting familiar with what happens where, and that's really only going to happen once you've been in there a few times and see it. I've really been enjoying DOA a lot. It's pretty time-consuming, though, but it is a lot of fun. There was one city run that we were doing, and we were rather near the end, but our Prot Monk disconnected, and we certainly didn't want to turn back at that point, so we pressed on, and let me tell you, that was some of the most fast and furious healing I've ever had to do. Thank goodness for our Bonder Monk and the Bip Necro, or I don't think we'd have made it. After every single battle, I breathed a sigh of relief and was like, "Oh my god, we lived!" And even though it made the run take a lot longer than it really should have taken, I actually really enjoyed it because, you know, very few things in this game really challenge my healing skills, but that one run, man, I was like, yeah, I healed good. Oh, and another thing to be aware of is how long the run you're in is going to take. If you can't set aside the 4 hours that one area needs, you really need to let your group know at the start so that they can find someone else. It's not like FOW where you can just do a couple of quests and either continue or call it quits. You really want to go all the way to the end, because that's when you get the quest completion as well as the rewards at the end. If you have to ditch mid the run, and you played a crucial role in the party, not only do you miss out, but you basically screw everyone else out of getting their drops too. So just remember that, and be aware of how long the quest you're on is going to take. So, even though all this wasn't very detailed, I hope it gives you some feeling for what you might expect going into DOA. And I guess in our next episode, I have no idea what that's going to be like, because I'm sure it's going to be totally weird actually looking at Sean while we record, but I can't wait, though. I'm sure it's going to be a blast. Until next time, this has been Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street.
So that'll do it for another episode of Guildcast. This will be the last audio episode before the San Francisco trip on June 26th, so if you haven't RSVP'd yet, email me right away and let me know if you're coming. There's a sticker contest going on in the Guildcast forums right now for a sticker design that I'll use for the free Guildcast stickers I'll give away at the meetup. Since there are so many great designs in the the contest thread, I'll probably print up like two or three or maybe four different designs to take with me. This wasn't originally going to be an official Guildcast contest or anything. That's why I never announced it on the last show or the show before that. I was actually just asking in the forums if anyone would be interested in designing something, but it's turned into quite a thread with about a dozen or so entries. So if you'd like to whip something up for a sticker design, here's some general guidelines. Keep it square or rectangular, about 5 inches by 3 inches or so, somewhere around there, just so that it's not round. It should have the words Guildcast on it somewhere, preferably the Guildcast logo, as well as the web address, www.guildcast.com. Also feel free to put other text on it, such as a Guild Wars podcast and fan site on it, if you'd like. In that thread in the forums, there's a post by me, I think it's still on the first page of the thread, where I include a PNG file of the Guildcast logo for anyone to use. It's a high-res logo. I'll put a link to that in the show notes for today also. I should probably write that down so that I can actually do that. So be creative. You know, come up with something cool. And if I pick and print your design, I'll send a handful of those stickers to you, and I'll mention your name as one of the winners on a future show. I'd like to have these to me by next week or so, probably by, the 16th, just so that I have enough time to get them printed and ready for the trip. Yeah, sorry about the late notice for all of you non-forum goers, but, because I actually announced this on the forum, probably about a month ago. But like I said, this wasn't even originally going to be a real contest, but it just kind of evolved into one. Next week's episode, I'm going to try to fit in before the San Francisco trip, and what it'll be is it'll be like a video episode all about the Guild Wars user interface, explaining what's what and what's where and all that. It'll probably be my only episode and my first episode where it's completely video. There won't be an audio companion to it. So I'll do the intro and the news and everything video. I probably won't be on the video. I'm sure it'll be in-game footage, because last time that was disastrous. But, that should be fun. So, until then, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.